Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to part two. This is still an episode with Pumbaa, part two of the episode with Pumbaa, about the Polish performance at the WTC 2023 that obviously Poland has won. But this time, we are not talking about the team as a whole. This time, we are talking about Pumbaa specifically, and even more specifically, about the list that he has taken to the event. Pumbaa, as a big fan of Thousand Sons, has taken Thousand Sons to the event and was quite successful with it. When we were doing the Creme de la Creme series, Pumbaa mentioned that, well, 10th edition isn't probably the best thing to play at an event like that. But throughout time, while he had some time to spend with his list, I think that sentiment has changed. Pumbaa, can you tell us something about it? Is it true that you started liking 10th edition because of Thousand Sons?
It is kind of the case, yes.
Mm.
I feel like if I was playing any other army in this edition, I would be very much less this edition would be very much less enjoyable for me, is what I feel. Right. I feel like this army has one of the highest skill floors and skill ceilings across the whole field. I feel like this army is forces you multiple times every game to force decision making, decisions that actually matter on the table, which I love when playing 40K. And because of that, I feel like this is the best, basically, army for me to the army that I enjoy the most, and I would enjoy the most across the whole field when playing. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not the strongest, it's not Eldari, I don't think it's on the GSC level, for example. I think it's up there, and I think it gives possibilities to the player to constantly surprise your opponent and make decisions on the table that force them into uncomfortable spots. Mm-hmm. Just by your play, which is awesome. I very much enjoy it. I enjoy it to the point where I'm already like thinking about changing the list, improving the list, and thinking some ideas I've seen at the WC and continue playing them for the foreseeable time, for the months to come.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we will leave that to the end, like the ideas to improve the list, but let's focus on maybe going into the event, the archetypes for Thousand Sons list. So tell us about your list. And then maybe tell us about some other Thousand Sons list, like, I don't know, maybe Vic's list or some other Thousand Sons list that you've seen. And then how do you think your list performs compared to those other ones?
Yeah, so my list, the basis of it was actually developed on the Liam VSL's list that he brought to the Pyro Cup, the event that we organized before the WTC as a kind of practice weekends for many national teams. And back then, I was still playing the version with Terminators in it and Magnus. So the version which basically was able to smash some pairings very dominantly, scoring 20-0 pretty handedly. However, it was also volatile in that sense that if you get the wrong pairing, you are unable to do those micro decisions to keep you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It also forced your hand sometimes to go all in, which I am not a fan of. I would consider myself to be a kind of a defensive player, a player that likes to play the long game to have options to fall back on if something goes mm-hmm. wrong. And that list sometimes forced your hand to go all in and try to score those 20s against those certain matchups. And on the other hand, that last version was not very flexible in the sense that if you had the bad pairing, you didn't have many options to actually score those couple of points that the team needed, for example. My list, the basis of it is a lot of characters, a lot of units of Rubric Marines, including two big blobs of Rubric Marines, one with Flamers that always accompanied Ahriman. It is basically a hammer unit of sorts unit that can deal with most of the things that opponent might throw at you. And the second part, the second big blob is with all bolters and the Umbrellific Crystal on the sorcerer. Mm-hmm. It's the unit that is basically unable to be targeted when sitting on the board. It's unable to be targeted by any artillery pieces, any no-loss shooting, any long-range shooting. So they can chill in the corner, and when time comes, they can do the mini Terminator combo. Mm-hmm. So they don't have as many shots, but with good use of stratagems, like giving them all psychic weapons and rolling everything to hit and wound and sitting next to Magnus, they can still do an incredible amount of damage to basically anything. So it's a small version of that Terminator block I was running previously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the basis of it. The list supports two liners.
I'm showing the list on the screen right now, so maybe let's go from the top and let's just explain what is what and what it's supposed to do.
Of course. So the Arryman is in every Thousand Sons list you see because of a couple of things. The main one is giving you one free ritual per battle, which is massive. It basically enables you to have that go turn when you use an extensive amounts of those cabal points, or rather the rituals that can swing the game. The biggest one is removing the save from an opponent. If he doesn't have a save, basically every single wound roll that goes through converts to damage. It's massive in that sense. But it also enables you to do multiple other tricks, like double movement, of course, double Doombolt. It's a tech piece that needs to be in every single Thousand Senses, I believe. Arryman also, in my particular case, joined the, as I've mentioned previously, joined the unit of 10 Rubric Marines with Flamers, giving them +1 to wound. And if the opponent was controlling the objective, they get roll everything to wound as well. With auto-hitting Flamers, that converts into a massive amount of damage across the board. So this was, as I've said, my hammer unit of sorts that was supposed to deal with any big threat that the opponents throws at me.
Right.
The Exalted Sorcerer on disc is a with Lord of Forbidden Lord is kind of a tech piece that was lacking for me from Liam's list. The main gist of it is the fact that this gentleman has the ability to slow down your opponent's unit if he, at the end of the movement phase, sees the opponent's unit within 18 inches of himself. Yeah, mm-hmm. On a 2+, he has the unit's range, movement range, advance, and charge rolls. So basically allows you to get essentially mute any melee threat that the opponent might have that is threatening your side of the board. And in the meta where Lich Guard, for example, Warrior Blobs, Custodes, any that type of unit roams around, I think it's essential to have him in the list. He's just a solid tech piece that can disable your opponent's threats. Because Thousand Sons, let me tell you, do not like melee at all. The next one is Infernal Master. It's kind of a staple in the list. It has Arcane Vortex, which increases the strength of his weapon and the damage of his weapon, essentially meaning that he is just a complete force to be reckoned with. If he shoots his overcharged weapon, it's 2d6 auto-hitting on range 18 auto-hitting shots, 7-2/2. Of course, we are playing Thousand Suns, so every 6/2 wound is usually mortals. And he also has the ability to exchange any one die on a wound roll, usually to a 6, meaning he's just a constant output of mortal wounds across your army. He's super cheap. He gives you 2 cabal points as well. With that upgrade, I think he's a force to be reckoned with, who can clear opponents' threats with immense reliability. Magnus. Magnus, I think it's in every single good Thousand Sons list, shots fired at Australia. I think he is just a menace. I loved every time I played him. I love the fact that I am actually able to field this model. He's one of my favorite models in the whole 40k range. incredible output, incredible buff across the whole army, very tanky, can be absolutely shifted as anything in this game, but he's sometimes your hammer unit that also enables you to push those good matchups for you and just force your opponent to deal with them if you don't want to get absolutely destroyed by this huge fly in your deployment zone. He buffs your army. He's just a staple for me. I love him. Thousands and Sorcerer with the Umbrella of Crystal, as I've said, joining the 10-man rubric unit with bolters. He also gives the unit lone operator outside of 18 inches, which is huge in any matchup that has out of line of sight shooting, long range shooting, say knights. Two of these for the same reason. They also have very good output with their psychic power. If you are joining the unit of rubrics, those gentlemen also reroll everything to hit and wound when something is on the objective and controlling it. So, still, mortal wounds, good output, and also a tech piece to protect yourself against any long-range shooting or out-of-line-of-sight shooting.
Mm-hmm. So, coming back to Magnus for a moment, when Poland was playing the United States, I went outside, and I think I was standing there with Wojtek from Hegemon, who was holding his phone, and he was actually watching War Games Live, who was streaming your game. And it was like, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes into the game, and Wojtek goes something along the lines of, "Oh my god, Pumba just lost Magnus. It's game over." And I'm like, what the... You know, how is this possible? And then I couldn't believe it, so I went inside, I went to Evert, and I'm like, "So I heard this game is done." He's like, "What the hell are you talking about?" "Well, Pumbaa lost Magnus, right?" And then I looked at the table and Magnus was still there, hidden behind the ruin. But apparently you didn't have your wings on. Or, well, he didn't have his wings on. So that was a relief, because for a moment there, I thought that the game was lost.
No. The wings went off because I was playing Lucas Troller from Team USA and he was playing Orcs. As you know, Orcs shooting... not very relevant, and we were in the middle of setting up charges and combats, so it was just way easier, because I have my Magnus, of course, magnetized for travel. It was just way easier to bring all his wings and like a staff off for the models, just basically standing around and do it precisely without bumping anything and damaging it. So it was just a kind of a gesture to make things easier on the table. Where the wings and the staff didn't matter.
All right. Moving on.
So we have 5 units of Rubric Marines. 2 tents that we've discussed previously. One with Flamers, one with Bolters, joining the character with Ahriman and Sorcerer of Crystal joining them respectively. And then 3 more units of 5s with 3 Flamers each. To be singing Rhinos with those characters, also supporting them, also giving them reroll to everything in Hidden Wound. Those guys actually can dish out incredible amounts of damage to anything that's on the objective. I think they cannot be ever disrespected because of that. Rerolling everything to wound, very strong mechanic as it turns out, and especially if that translates to any psychic powers that the character in the unit might have, super threatening to anything basically in the game. Even if it's a toughness 10 knight on the objective, I think it's still going down to just 2 of these.
Completely agree.
Mm-hmm. Then we have 3 rhinos, which is the biggest part of the list, even though they are under the radar. The fact that I'm deploying most of my units in those rhinos means that any non-line of sight shooting, say guard or like the Desolator's Marines, have basically nothing in the list to shoot at. From the deployment zone. These enable me to push those matchups kind of aggressively. They are actually very difficult to shift for some armies. If you use smoke screens on them, they are minus 1 to hit and gain cover even if they are in the middle of the table with no terrain in sight. So they can actually deal. In that sense, they are a crucial part of the list. Of course, they all have firing decks as well, so they can still basically function a little bit like an old Razorback, because you choose 2 weapons from the squad that is sitting inside, and they can shoot out of it. The Rhino is technically shooting, but using the weapons that the squad has. So you can have your rhino deal a lot of damage, actually, if you consider you have some pretty good psychic spells, psychic weapons on your characters, right? So that works most of the time. Generally, a great tech piece, and I think this is where the plan of the list diverges from any other build, because of these three rhinos that are a crucial part of what's pushing the table and actually controlling objectives. Hard to shift, then you have to shift the actual squad. You can do some activation locking of your opponents, so they can remove the rhino, but then the squad pops out. Yes, they are bottle shocked, but my next phase, they will become unbottle shocked in my command phase, so they will still score a point. So activation locking, huge part of it as well.
Is it true that you came to realize quite late that, I don't know, you can either get out of the rhino after movement or something like that, and that also drastically improved how you performed with the list?
No. So in 10th edition, you can leave the transport after you can disembark from the transport after you move it. That's mm-hmm. very clear. And this is definitely the part of it. However, the rules for movement after disembarkation, after the transport has already made a normal move, are a little bit wonky in a sense that the part of the text actually says you cannot move that unit to that disembark the same phase. So it basically prevents you from moving the rhino, disembarking, and moving again. Sure, they are considered to have made a normal move. And that the text says it's until the end of the phase, but the bullet points below actually say you cannot do it until the end of the turn, which is a massive difference because Thousand Suns, Temporal Surge, I believe the ritual is called, basically the double movement on any unit, happens in the shooting phase. So I was always going off of the bullet points because it was more restrictive to my list and how it played. It basically, I assumed the worst possible scenario that I cannot ever double move after disembarking from the transport that has already moved. Actually turned out that we are going with just until the end of the phase. So that meant that I could move my rhino, disembark from it 3 inches, and then if I really wanted to, double move the squad that was inside still. That increased the range, the threat range of all of my basically things sitting in the rhino immensely, especially relevant for the Arman squad, who could move 12 with the rhino, disembark 3, and then move another 10 inches with the 12 inches range on the flamers. Arman was also on the disc, so he can move even further, looking for line of sight and swords. So that was a massive difference in how the threat ranges worked for my army in this sense. It didn't play a huge part, but just the possibility of me doing that and me informing my opponents that I could do that just changes the flow mm-hmm. of the game.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we have basically chaff. All the chaff I was able to take without destroying the essence of the list. We have 3 Enlightened, just good chaff unit because it's cheap and cheap is good. And then I was able to manage to ally some demons in, picking 3 flamers who are pretty good, have 3 wounds each, 4 plus wounds, so they are actually not trivial to shift through the board. They have deep strike, so they can actually not use the reserves, just deep strike anywhere 9 inches from the opponent, mainly used for scoring secondaries, let's be honest. And then we have the blue scribes because I didn't fit the changeling in, although the blue scribes have its merits. For example, they are OC2 because they are 2. Blue horror sitting on the disc,
models, yeah.
which always sucks as the opponents because they always assume it's OC1 as every character mm-hmm. it's due, so you have to actually play something on the objective where they are a lone operator, actually sick wounds, 4 up in wound, not trivial to shift either way. Even if you are able to shoot them, they will usually die early in the game, depending on how the game is going, but they also force your opponent to come into the middle, actually shoot them. They cannot do missions, say if I'm playing against something that I can take fixed secondary against, they will always be doing homers first turn in the middle of the board. If not, they will be always positioned to either go to the objective or be set up to do investigate signals at the corner of the board first turn, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Fast, versatile, With a little nice trick of them actually being able to deal mortal wounds at the end of the movement phase. On a six, up you deal d6 mortal wounds, less if you roll less on the die. But anybody can tell you if you roll that six and deal five mortal wounds to a knight in the middle of the table randomly, it can actually make a big difference. So
yeah,
just little trick that they have.
Mm-hmm. So other list archetypes that I've seen or that I have faced include, for example, Vortex Beasts and include mm-hmm. the Changeling. Why have you not opted for any of those?
So the Changeling is pretty pretty easy because building lists in 10th edition is very restrictive in the sense that you cannot take any upgrades off. So if your list comes up out to be 2,005 points, you don't really have enough space to, like,
yeah, there's no way
work around.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Exactly. Then it basically means you are dropping a unit to change that or mm-hmm. changing something significant at this point. So the Changeling is 75 points, where the Bruskers are 65. I think if I had those 10 extra points, I would have opted for the Changeling.
Mm-hmm.
But also as I've said, the scribes absolutely have their merits over the Changeling. And the beasts. The beasts are interesting. I would have loved to have one, but it just diluted the list too much, in my opinion. Because I had three rhinos in opposed to any other list besides, I think, Liam's, mm-hmm. I actually didn't need that extra beast to push the table. My list also actually doesn't rely on excessive amounts of cabal points usage. And because most of the stuff is starting in transports, I usually start my games with six cabal points only. Whereas Vix, or for example, Arnes is from Team Germany, usually start their games with like 20 of them, right? So mm-hmm. I usually space my cabal points in a very different way than they have, where I have a constant flow of them across the game, around 6 to sometimes 10. If every single rhino, for example, pops up or I disembark in the next phase, I might have a lot more, up to 18. But usually the game flows works like I have 6 to 10 cabal points across many turns. Even if I start losing units, other I will then pop out of the rhinos and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And because I had this opportunity to push the board with the rhinos, I didn't feel like I needed the extra unit to actually play the game, play like force your opponents to trade, because the rhinos are already doing that. And the beast is absolutely amazing. Like, I would love to have those, but it just didn't fit in that particular build, in my opinion. I also didn't particularly need the double ranges of my cabals, because most of the time, because of the rhinos as well, I'm actually trying to close the range to my opponent and use those cabals this way.
Okay. What I'm showing on the screen right now is the list of Vic Vijay. So mm-hmm. another Thousand Sons player. He opted for a different army composition. So just going through it really quickly, there are similarities, as you said, Ahriman in every list. He actually took two Exalted Sorcerers on disc, mm-hmm. an Infernal Master, or three, Magnus,
yeah.
Another Sorcerer. It's incredible how many characters you can pack into a list today. But yeah, Rubric Marines. So again,
all small units also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he did bring a beast,
Rhino. And two Rhinos, right?
And
Enlightened and Changeling. The lists look very similar. They really do, in my opinion, look very similar, but they play fundamentally different from each other, which is super interesting to me. And like how different the game plan is and how like differently they try to shoot your opponent. Like their tables in the Pyrex Matrix, for example, would be significantly different, like completely different sometimes. From just those small changes. Vix is running, RNA from Team Germany has been running a very similar list to Vix, just without demons, and some small changes, like adding, I think, one character more. But as I've said, even though they look similar, they try to play the game in a very different way. Mm-hmm. So I'm super interested to actually try to pivot into that list. I think it has different pairings, of course. My list was purpose-built to handle some other stuff than theirs was, but I think this actually has more merit, for example, in singles play.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that's a question that I'm going to come back at the end, whether those lists play into singles. But let's focus on your list still. Let's get back to that one and let's discuss maybe what the plan for that list was when it came to the team event, the pairings. What were the matchups that you wanted to get, the matchups that you wanted to tackle that you marked green? And then what were the matchups that you knew that this list wouldn't really fare well against?
So the list, the general idea of the list was for it to be able to play every single matchup to hold out points. I would, playing with the Terminators, I realized having something that doesn't need so much protection in the pairings process would be beneficial. And that's something that could even get sacrificed and still score some points against everything was very crucial for me. The list had two general ideas. It could play against anything that brings a lot of artillery or a lot of non-line of sight shooting. The two main victims here were Guard, of course, and Deathwatch. With their Desolators. I think those are good. Both of them are very good pairings for my list. Basically, the artillery and both any non-line of sight shooting has very little to actually deal efficiently with, especially at the start, even if I don't go first. The second was Knights. I could play Knights to a draw instead of smashing it with Terminators, for example. But that list. Still, almost no deploys on the table playing against Knights. So you are shooting at Rhinos. You are probably popping them, but I still have the units that were inside and more cabal points now to play with, and I can still push an objective and try to hide behind small ruins. If I pack the unit tightly under the floors of the units, if the unit is small, I can probably still hide from those towering Knights. So that was the main idea. The bad matchups would be definitely Custodes. I think the list can hold them to any score, but generally it's a very difficult task for that list to shift Custodes efficiently. Another one that I really didn't want to play was Eldari, but that's very dependent on the build I was coming up against. I still think I didn't actually play Eldar in that event, but I still think I could have held more than a significant amount of lists that we came up against. I could definitely play to a score, holding that for like a 7, for example. That list also wasn't awful against GSC. I think it wasn't a winning matchup by any means, but still, I think I'm playing for a 7. Because of the Rhinos, GSC actually, they will definitely pop them, don't get me wrong, but they actually need to sacrifice something if I push the Rhinos aggressively into that matchup and, for example, go first, as I tested previously. That GSC actually needs to defend their home objective, deal with the Rhinos, deal with what's inside there. It slows them down to a point where I can actually try to front load my scoring in the first part of the game before I get absolutely tabled. And then probably GSC still wins that, but not for to with a score that's like 15-5. Maybe I'm holding for a 13-7 for them. Sometimes 12-8.
And they cannot really be that happy-go-lucky with their blips as well, because those Rhinos are actually quick.
Can actually tag units as well. Magnus is a threat that can pop blips and stuff. Magnus also needs to be dealt with. It has -1 damage, so they will definitely kill him. Don't get me wrong, I've seen it happen on multiple occasions. But they need to actually sacrifice a good amount of shooting into that. So I'm basically trying to hold out for as long as possible on the objective, score as many points as possible, and then probably die in a horrible way.
Okay. Have you played any test games against Skark and his no-loss list? Because you said that you would feel comfortable, fairly comfortable playing against artillery. So Skark's list is almost exclusively artillery. So have you played that matchup?
I have not tested that particular matchup, but I knew Skark's list so much. Like, I had so much insight into that list and how it plays. I've seen him play so many games against so many opponents by the time I decided, like, kind of shifted my list in that direction, that I knew exactly what I needed to do for my list to be efficient against him. I also knew what to expect, like, how to look for specific Thousand builds where Skark would crumble, or the ones that he could easily tackle. So that was the gist of it. I didn't play that particular matchup with him, but I also knew the basics of how this list functions and how it wants to play the game.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about your games. There were seven games at the WTC that you played, three in the group stage. I don't know if you want to tackle all three of the group stage games together or each of them individually. Were there any interesting moments in those games? I'll leave it up to you how you want to go about it.
I think I'm just going to summarize some of those. The first one against South Africa, against the captain of South Africa, absolute gentleman. Generally, all of my opponents, let's just give it straight right now, all of my opponents were absolutely lovely, which is, I think, the case for every single one of our games at WTC. It's a theme at this event that basically every game is absolutely fucking fantastic. So my games against the captain of South Africa, he had a very unusual Eldari list that didn't support a Wraith Knight, didn't support a Wraith Guard blob as well. So it was very. I've talked to him actually about this list after the games. I think they've realized that they've kind of misjudged how Eldari can be played, and they try to kind of build it against everything to score points, like as a defender's list almost, instead of an attacker's score high list. So it was designed very differently. It had three, I think, or two Fire Prism, two Night Spinners, couple of support platforms. Didn't have anything to really, which was very significant at the moment, didn't have anything to actually push the middle of the board, except for Incarn. And that was the one threat who could actually play objectives in the middle of the board. So I knew without the Wraith Knight, without the Wraith Guard that pushed me aggressively, I could use my Rhinos to my advantage, push very aggressively into the middle, hold the three objectives, and be able to score points until I get slowly tabled because Eldar, don't get me wrong, are still broken, but he just has no merit to play the game of Warhammer at the middle of the tables against my army, which can definitely kill anything that it comes across in the middle of the board. So this is basically how the game played out. I managed to score a 14 out of that because I was just able to hide my pieces in the middle of the board on the objectives, fighting for them constantly and still scoring good for secondaries. And then I get tabled.
Yeah, it did look
But
kind of grim when I approached the table a couple of times. I saw that Lian's tanks were there, but your army was like melting all the time. But when I spoke to him, like he was all, sweating and he was all nervous, and I was like, "Well, dude, you look pretty good on the table. What's going on?" And he's like, "Ah, he's beating me on points."
that's the fact, like the game, let's never forget that it's played 4 points, right? And if you are able to hold your opponent in their backfield for like 4 turns straight, and then the tanks actually try to table you and push the middle objective in the fifth turn, it doesn't swing the game as much as you would expect on maybe on some missions, but not on this particular one.
So that's RSA done. Then came Wales and finally Finland, right?
Correct. So the Wales game was pretty easy for me, actually. I played against Necrons. I had it as a draw. That usually you should end up in a draw. The gentleman had one level of Warriors, two level of Lich Guard, and I was very much prepared to play this matchup. I think he felt a little uncomfortable against Thousand Sons. I don't know if he had that army played out, like practiced. He felt very scared sometimes to go hard into objectives, push me more. So I was just I managed to remove blob after blob after blob, still trying to sandbag him. And those that I couldn't deal with, just use my Exalted Sorcerer to my advantage. And I managed to score a nice 20 out of that. Beautiful. I think the difference became, like, the main difference was I knew how to play that matchup very well. I played it multiple times, and I don't think my opponent knew Thousand Suns to such an extent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then it was Finland. And Finland was interesting because, I mean, in a moment you'll give us all the details, but we did meet during that game when you and your opponent actually went out to smoke a cigarette. And when we were discussing that, you were just sitting there chilling, like smoking your cigarette, discussing whatever.
We were on turn four. We had an absolutely fucking wonderful game. We were on turn four. We looked at our clock. We had 2 hours in the round to spare. And we were like, let's just chill out. Let's go for a smoke. Let's discuss things. It's all wonderful.
I mean, you do have to care for, you know, your well-being and so on. So actually, that additional rest that you can get in between rounds or even during rounds is vital. But when we met and we spoke about that, you said it was funny because it's I've never seen that before. Two players in the middle of the game, just assessing how the game is going to go, and both you and your opponent from Finland, you agreed that you were going to win this. So he said, yeah, Pumba is doing great, he's going to outdo me on points, so 13-7 probably. And you said something along the lines of, yeah, if I push stronger, it might even be a 14-6. But then the game ended in a draw. So what happened?
Cards happened a little bit. You can never take into account the specific draws that you're going to get, especially that there were still many cards to go through. And I think this is the difference between I could score maybe, as I've said, 13-7, maybe 12-8. My opponent drew way better at the last turn, which can always happen. I am very impressed by how he played the game, actually. I think he was, as we've discussed after the game, actually, he was very prepared to play the matchup against my list. I think he said he practices at least two times, but spent excessive amounts of time analyzing how I am going to play it out, what my first moves are going to be, how I'm going to push into certain objectives. And he basically said after the game that I did exactly what they have prepared for, which is just so crazy to me. But my list, as I said, I have a lot of my list does a lot of decision points during the game. But for example, if I go first on a specific table or in specific missions, I think it's kind of possible to figure out how my first at least turn is going to go, right? And he has done exactly that. I think the biggest choice that he made, which actually meant that the score is going to be kept tight between us, is Focus Magnus just extensively in the first turn. He was very much aware he's not going to shift that model in one turn of shooting. I pushed into the middle, behind the wall. All of his artillery pieces basically went into Magnus, leaving me at half wounds. I think he was down to 8 after that. So it feels super bad, right? To just spend your whole first turn hammering that -1 damage Magnus with all the rerolls and stuff just to half damage him. But he also realized that if he doesn't do that, that Magnus is going to soon be in his deployment zone, absolutely destroying him, and he's gonna have to deal with him with less artillery pieces, with less resources, and a maximum amount of wounds, right?
Yeah.
So he very much expected the fact that Magnus must be dealt with in this matchup. There's no other way around it. I must take swallow the pill and actually try to shift at least half of him in this very first turn, leaving my opponent to score multiple points and still sitting in his rhinos and controlling the table. But it must be done. There's no other way around it. And this is exactly what he's done. And I think it was a wonderful choice. It was a decision point that's very difficult to make, I feel like. But this meant I had to actually trade the Magnus into something. I think it was Sentinels. I showed like one other player piece on something, but I knew that Magnus is dying this turn, because if he could shift half of him in the first shooting phase, then with the help of like Hunter Killer missiles and anything else, he's definitely going down. So I basically must use him right now and not leave him, for example, to hang back and defend my objectives. So this was a crucial decision point, which meant he held me to a score. Then he was able to multiple times just revive his three size unit of Skull Sentinels and try to keep playing for the objectives, making some like looking for his outs, because some people are like, oh, so someone made a 9-inch charge out of his reserve. That's so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but also it's playing for your outs. If you know that's going to make a difference and the risk actually involved is not huge, you must expect your opponent to do that choice. And he did that multiple times, but it was absolutely the right choice, and he was looking for his outs perfectly. So mm-hmm. kudos to him. I think he played that game extremely well. And as I've said, I was expecting a 13-17 score out of that if the game was going in the same pace as it was. Some cards, swings, went in there. Perfect play from our opponent meant we ended on a draw. But that game was super nice to play. And I think my opponent was, on the contrary to my previous opponent, extremely well prepared into my list.
Okay. So yeah, you've played Eldar. You've played Guard.
Necron.
And then Necron.
Necron and then Guard.
Right. At some point in this interview, you already mentioned that your army composition allows you to pick fixed secondaries. Have you picked fixed secondaries in any of those games, or not really?
Yeah, I definitely picked fixed secondaries against that particular Guard build, because mm-hmm. he was full on artillery without the, for example, the carriages and stuff. So if anybody knows and know the Forge World carriages, Medivh, and Estrigil batteries, they are infantry and not vehicles, so they don't give points for bringing them. But that particular list was full on artillery vehicles, along with the one Hellhound and such, and just a billion Sentinels constantly reviving over and over. So that was a very easy 20 to score there. And that was supported with teleport homers done by my Changeling, my Blue Scribes, and then Flamers, because I had very many pieces that could actually score that particular mm-hmm. secondary.
Okay. All right. So that was the group stage. Very successful. Poland leaves as the first team in that group. And then you get paired into Sweden. So what did Sweden pair into you?
I had the pleasure of playing against Imperial Knights mm-hmm. with two Crusaders, many Halberdiers, and many Wargaves. Without Mysterious Guardian upgrade, so the one that it's one right knight being removed from the board and then repositioned, so that didn't have that particular tech piece. That was very important on the knight's table choice, and that was also with knights going first. I think those two particular like things just changed the matchup significantly. For points. What happened is basically what I expected to happen. I had that matchup as a draw in my tables. I think that was the expected result. Draw, by which I mean I could score an 8 to a 12, right? Not a perfect draw. I don't believe in just literally putting a particular score in this game. I don't mm-hmm. think that ever worked. So what happened there is exactly what I expected. Without the hammer unit of Terminators, my list had trouble shifting the big knights. Whereas I could easily deal with any amount of small knights that are coming at me, actually shifting one big knight in a single turn without the absolute mayhem that the Terminators are doing turns out to be hard, especially if those knights, Crusaders, are playing at the back of the board looking for angles at the longest possible range that they can achieve. So after three turns, or maybe even two of my turns, all my opponent has left is two Knights Crusaders and I think one Hildern. Every single small knight just came onto the board, was immediately shifted by the rest of my army. The problem came where, well, I need to trade a little pieces for that. So I had little to spare to actually push objectives out of my deployment zone, right? Because I was a little bit defending against the knights, especially going second. And the knights are starting, the big knights are starting to push out of the deployment zone and try to search for more the angles that are more difficult to hide from, especially with towering, of course, and on their table choice. So I'm starting to have the trouble of I need to actually try to shift the big knight, otherwise the flank is getting pushed and I don't have anything to hold that objective with, because if this big knight is standing on the objective, there's no hiding on it. And possibly he's even pushing me into my deployment zone. I tried to do that at one point, having the possibility of to actually push out onto the objectives more aggressively and try to score a little more points from that game. What happened, unfortunately, after I teleported my unit of Bolter Marines with the Umbrella Crystal to try to do the combo along with Magnus onto the one of the big knights that's pushing my flank. They pretty much all died in Overwatch. I think I was left with just the sorcerer and like a sergeant. That can happen. That can actually happen. Or the Knight Crusader with sustained hits is just a beast in Overwatch. I rolled a little bit under on my cover saves, and they just all died. That also meant that that basically meant I was never going to kill a big knight anymore. And because of that, I was unable to push the board harder and slowly died, just still scoring points. But those knights, unfortunately, still stayed there until the end, very end of the game. The game ended with a draw. I'm very satisfied with that result, especially considering not having the table and not going first. I think both of these would have been huge swings for me.
Okay. All right, so that's Sweden. From Sweden, we move on to, as I've said many a time, a game that potentially could be the final already. So your game against the United States, and you get paired, if I remember correctly, into orcs. Is that something
I
that
get.
going sorry. Go on.
I basically sacrificed myself into orcs. I think we
Okay,
were
so
underprepared.
sacrifice.
I had that as a bad matchup for me, and they opened up with the orcs, and I think we were just underprepared for that situation. So we had to make a decision on the spot. The custodians were always going into that matchup. It's good for them, but I think it was between me trying to get some points there, or Duda trying to go into that and actually win it, but who knows for how much points. And I think we decided on to basically I decided with my partners to sacrifice the Thousand Sons, and they were not looking particularly amazing across our tables. The gist of it is about this game. You can of course watch it on stream. It will stream live. And something I realized way later after that game has happened, after talking to Vic, especially, that played the same very matchup in the next round, I was underprepared for it in a sense that I didn't have good enough macro plan to handle this situation. I didn't actually play this matchup before the tournament. I didn't have enough time for to play, prepare for that particular matchup. And because of that, I played a pretty bad game in terms of macro play. So I didn't have good enough game plan overall. What kept me in the game to score some points was, I think, my micro decisions. I think I tried to and managed to do some good decisions on the board itself when it came to, like, to get me out of trouble basically as much as possible. But because the macro plan wasn't any good, and I didn't have it prepared before the game, that meant I was still just on the back foot the whole game, getting constantly pushed by orcs. This is basically how I expected this game to go. And only after talking to Vic, I realized there is a path to victory to be found there. But that required way more practice into that and actually understanding the list a lot better than I did. Yeah. So what kept me in the game is some small decisions. Not going first, of course, didn't help against a particular list. The mission didn't help for sure, because it was very stacked across two objectives, and it's very hard to shift the orcs with that amount of transports and bodies from them. But yeah, I think this matchup, even for my list, even though, for example, Arne's or Vic's list is way better into that, I still think that was you could achieve a lot more points from that particular game if you had a good plan against it from the very start. Like, I think the main takeaway from that is like having a strong flank, not trying to actually play forward all the objectives, having a strong flank, try to shifting that and just preparing the fuck out of when the Wah turn is coming. Because if you survive that, actually after that, and it was also visible on with my game where after the Wah turn, the orcs actually just fucking died. And had it happen when I had more resources left, I think I could still push to a decent score. So I think it's all about managing how the Wah turn is handled, how they are hitting your lines. And if you manage to scrape out enough units at your side of the board or like enough units of yours survive that Wah turn, I think that game is definitely winnable.
So what was the final score?
It was 16-4 to Lucas. He played the game, by the way, incredibly well. Like, I cannot underestimate how precise, how diligent, how great of an opponent he was. I think he just literally made all the correct choices. Yeah, that was a perfect like masterclass from the orcs there.
So was it a game in which, I mean, the score was looking even more grim, but then the coaches came and said, yeah, we're not doing that great. We need to fight for a draw. You need to push as much as you can.
There was no opportunity for me to ever push. I was on the losing side of the matchup, and I knew from the very start I'm scraping for every single point out there. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely constantly looking for them as hard as I could, possibly could. So the coaches kind of, they relayed me the information that we needed every single point, but I kind of knew that already, right? That I'm scraping every single point from this. So every decision that I made tried to fight for that more points available to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, luckily, you and all the others, all your efforts, your skill transferred into enough points to secure a draw. I think Evert summed it up very well in where he said that. I don't know if you agree with what he said, but he said you lost the pairings, so Americans did the pairings much better or much more to their favor, and it was only and only down to the player skill. That you actually managed to scrape that win. That draw.
Yep, agreed 100%. I think we were a little unprepared for what they are coming up with. I don't think we prepared the pairings diligently enough before the game. I think the fact that this was a second round of the day, right? So you don't have that ending to prepare and just the middle of the day to sit down and actually think about some stuff. I think the pairings went way better in the Americans' in the US favor. Yeah,
right.
I agree 100%.
Okay, conscious of time, moving on. Day four. So during day four, at the beginning, you face Spain. Who are you paired into, and were you happy with that pairing?
I was paired into guard. So as you can imagine, absolutely lovely pairing for me. General the pairing strategy worked out perfectly against the Spanish, although they had the most shout them out right now. They had the most balls to the wall approach I've ever seen in the pairings process. They first defended GSC, second defended Eldar. That was just off the wall insane. Just trying, I think, to get those two the best possible matchups that they can get. That was just insane to me. But yeah, the pairings went very well. I was playing against the guard, and that was the game that I'm gonna forget for the rest of my life probably, because I was straight up going for a 20 and then I scored a 5.
Wow. So tell us all about your mistakes.
I would like to say I very much thought about this game. Mm-hmm. And it's the worst to ever play the game on dice, but I really felt like I got fucking dice this game.
Right, yeah, like nothing went into your favor. Mm.
Like legitimately. I think the biggest swing happened. there were multiple, let's be honest, but the biggest swing was the Spanish player actually didn't play that matchup, I think, nearly as well as the Finnish player that I was playing against. Mm-hmm. What he did is ignore the Magnus in the first round, right? Just slightly bonking him from like one wound. So he was still on 15 wounds in the middle of the board. I went first, by the way, again. Huge favor for me there. So instead, he cleared out one of the rhinos and the squad with Ahriman in it, still leaving Ahriman alive on one of the objectives and taking it away from me. But the Magnus was in the middle of the board, or like pushing the flank, one of the flanks, and just preparing to smash into everything that he had in his deployment zone, and just completely rolling over that side of the table. And what happened is, I had all of my defenses prepared. I knew that if Magnus survives or I get enough resources now, the game is basically over. I was still able to, my second turn, I push Magnus, I clear two artillery pieces, I clear all of Scout Sentinels, I'm basically pushing into his deployment zone. Mm-hmm. And then I pass the turn, and I lose Magnus from three artillery pieces. With double rerolls up, with double blanks up, with 15 wounds with minus one damage. Mm-hmm. I was dealt 8 wounds straight up by one single basilisk. Just to like reiterate that, that's d6 plus 3 shots. Hitting, I believe, on 3s with lethal hits, wounding on 5s. And I've got a 4-up save because I'm on additional IP strat or no cover, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm on 4s. So from d6 plus 3 shots, 3s, lethals, wounding on 5s, 4-up save, I get dealt 8. That halves Magnus. He's down to 7, and then 2 more Manticores just clear him out. And that's including rerolls and blanks. So 3 artillery pieces, you know, whereas the whole entire army of like my previous opponent has done 8 wounds, mm-hmm. one single basilisk has done the same to him this very phase. So Magnus gets picked up off the table. I already know that my score went just from 20 to like maybe 14. Because that makes all the difference, but I'm still winning. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't get any better, is what I'm saying. it just kept happening, some insane stuff. Like Rubric Marines just losing a fight to a Guardsman squad with Ursula, just literally just losing 5 guys straight away from just normal attacks and just punching you using bad power fists and their knuckles. One Scout Sentinel with one last cannon and like a hunter killer missile killing a rhino from 9 wounds with a smoke screen up. It just kept happening, is what I'm saying. One Manticore clearing up a unit of rubrics with the character. It kept happening, it kept happening. The problem with that is if you are getting table on the mission priority targets, pretty sure that's the one. That means you are scoring a bit like nothing at the end of the game, because every single objective that you control scores you 5 points at the end of the game. And it also means that your opponent is scoring both at the end of the game and at the start of their command phase, even if they are going second. That meant that just because I was getting so tabled and pressured at the last moments of the game, my opponent scores as 10 plus 15 on primary, and I score a double 0. That's 25 point swing to him. I get nothing at the end, and the game just flips on its head, and I score 5 from a very favorable pairing. That's legitimately, if that one thing with Magnus didn't happen, I think I was going for at least 15 plus. 20 was very much possible.
Just insanity. But yeah, you get those games at times. Again,
I was very happy. I was I'm not gonna say I wasn't tilted after that game. I think I tried to keep it cool as much as possible, and we still had a great experience. My opponent was lovely. He very much knew what was happening, like he wasn't trying to mitigate what the fuck is going on. So that was very nice of him, like to acknowledge the what's happening on the table. So we still played a lovely game. I was just so glad that this happened in this round, where it actually didn't impact the final score of the round.
Yeah,
I was very much relieved that this happened that exact round.
Yeah, thank God it didn't happen in the next one, because in the next one, which was pretty much the final, you were facing mm-hmm. England, and mm-hmm. again, they paired Nassim into you.
Yes, that was actually, I think, we were the champions, so basically the only ones that were not selected for the pairings process. We were the very last one.
How did you feel about that? Mm-hmm.
Good. Very favorable pairing, something that I was very prepared for. I knew that word very well from our practice. Nassim's list was interesting in the sense that he had the Hellblasters, but he, for example, didn't have the Thunderfire cannon. I think his list generally was a little suboptimal, even compared to other Deathwatch builds that I've seen roaming around. Yeah, good pairing, going first. And this time, Dice didn't actually roll me over. Although Nassim tried, he did fucking try to blow my whole squad of Flamers with Ahriman with just one Overwatch, scoring, I believe, 5 out of 9 sixes on sustained hits. So 10 hits, let's go. So he did try. But he unfortunately wasn't able to pull out, win out of that. We played basically the whole round, the whole 4 hours, but we had time. And we played just a lovely game of 40K with a lot of banter, as you are maybe aware. Me and Nassim are very much friends at this point, mm-hmm. know each other for a long time. So
yeah, I think
a lot of banter. But
I think he was a moral victor of that game because he actually beat you in a rules dispute, right?
Don't get me started on that. I still think he was wrong. That was just, let's be honest, no fucking offense to any judge that judged this game. That judge was completely, that call was perfectly reasonable. It also was very much not impactful. Like, he killed one fucking Rubric Marines of that whole dispute. So, no big deal. But yeah, I still believe I was correct. And even if Hellblasters die on Overwatch, they are still firing at 6 up because the stratagem says until the end of the phase, they are firing at the 6 up. And I won't take any shit for that. And I already told Nassim in UKTC, if I have any access to that FAQ, because I am judging a GD, he is not firing Overwatch on the 2 plus with the fucking Hellblasters that night. The grudge is on.
Oh, that's great. That's so cool.
Yeah. Overall, a lovely game to finish the event with. Like, Nas was a gentleman throughout the whole game. A lot of banter, but also after the game, he congratulated me immensely. We knew the score of the round actually before our game finished. But still, I was very much trying to go for 100 to 60 mm-hmm. to push that 14th score. Like, literally, I had a 14-6 on the table. Last turn, he's going last. He tells me, all right, so if I do this, I'm definitely scoring a 13-7, right? And I'm like, yes, try it, because I'm not going to fucking give it to you. And literally, in the last fucking turn, I put everything to protect one single Sorcerer Marine for him to not score any No Prisoner points. Then I overwatch a unit that's coming on the objective, and I get this 16-4, which was very funny, to just pressure him, squeeze him out of every single point. But yeah, also I'm going to finish the event with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I think we're done with the review of the list and the review of the games. One last question that I have that we already mentioned closer to the beginning of the episode. Do you think that this list would fare well in singles? Because I think many of our listeners, that would be the first question that pops into their minds. Mm-hmm. Yes, no, and if no, what changes would you introduce to it, or would you just direct people to Vic's list?
I think it can definitely play singles. Don't get me wrong. As I've said, this list was designed to keep your score tight against everything. Mm-hmm. And my assessment in the team's event, of course, is always based on my opponent playing the perfect game of 40K. Mm-hmm. And any mistake that he does is probably going to mean that you actually win the matchup. We are talking things about like GSC, maybe even Eldar. I think they are absolutely beatable with this list. but it requires a little bit of a skill difference, I feel like, or something on in the dice, for example, helping you.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be honest, I myself, even I think I'm pivoting towards this kind of MSU style list. I think it's just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
This list looks so much fun that you have such an abuse of cabal points. Like you can abuse so many things. You can just deal a gajillion mortal wounds over and over again. So I think in that sense, that this might be just more a little bit more fun to play. Also, they all require a very good pilot. I'm just going to just put it out there. I think this army legitimately is very difficult to play. I think you need to, if you want to try it, you need to get your preps in. Because otherwise you will struggle. You will have a lot of difficult choices to make during the game, as I've said, which is very rewarding, and I encourage everybody to try. But I think also if you fumble those decisions, you will struggle in your games at the very start. So don't get discouraged by that. I think, as I've said, my list has some merit. I think Vic's / Arne's list is a little bit more fun. I think the biggest difference, for me at least, is that their list actually, I think, struggles against guard, for example. So if you're, or against nose tuning, if your meta is full of nose tuning, or everybody decides that this one Polish list from WTC is worth trying out, I wouldn't necessarily encourage playing that particular build with many, many sorcerers with no units in them. I think it might actually struggle against that particular matchup. I don't think it's unplayable, but I think it might struggle there. However, if your meta is more in line with, for example, is ripe in custodies, I think their list is way better at handling that. I think my list is way worse at that particular pairing. I think it crumbles there, whereas their build can definitely handle custodies way, way better. So it's always dependent on what meta are you playing at, you're playing in, and like what your particular goals are. I think they are both playable, and that's pretty much it. Myself, I'm just so enamored with Vic's list or like Arne's list. I think I already have some amalgamation of the two prepared for the next tournament I'm going to, which is literally tomorrow. I'm playing some local RGTs because I just love them so much, and our local community is just amazing. So I'm looking forward to meeting all of those people after my hiatus in the local scene. So I think that list is great. Just don't play the Australian list. I think
Yeah, I heard many people say that. But yeah, they scored, I mean, they came third, so it cannot be that bad. But yeah, anyway, Pumbaa, it's been great. It's been great talking to you. This is the end of part two. To our listeners and viewers, do let us know if you like this kind of content, if you like to have this access to some, let's say, extra bits or some extra insights like we are doing here. This episode will probably be put on YouTube to be available to everyone in 2 weeks to a month, so you can enjoy this episode for the first 2 weeks exclusively. And then go into our Discord if you have any questions to Pumbaa. Pumbaa is also in our Discord, so I guess you can ask some questions, and if Pumbaa has time, he I hope he will answer some.
I will definitely answer them if anything comes up. I encourage everybody to ask them, throw them around. I will do my best to answer every single one.
So you can go to like the Thousand Suns section, or you can go into the show feedback section. Feel free to just drop those questions, and then, or maybe at mention Pumbaa, and then hopefully you will get your answer. All right, great, cool. Thank you, Pumbaa, one more time. Congrats on being the champion of the world one more time. And I guess I'll be turning to you in some time again to maybe do another episode with us.
Thank you very much for having me again. Thank you for your work at the whole WTC. I think you guys did an amazing job, and see you everybody at the next events or chatting in the Discord.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.